from the Palnessa Studios in Orange County, California. It's the Podcast of Thousands! Late night talk showcasing performers and less time with zero the budget. From actors to YouTubers and everything in between, here's your host, Michael Palnessa!
I want to start out by taking a moment to thank the talented Podcast of Thousands family member, Derek Jordan, for the new incredible intro and outro for the show. I really appreciate his hard work, and if you're interested in hiring him to create something for you, just go to DerekJordanOfficial.com. That's DerekJordanOfficial.com. Thanks, Derek. On tonight's show, we'll have guest comedian Corey Kahaney.
Things are tight for everybody. I filled out a credit card application the other day, and you know where it says other income? I put other credit cards. I'm paying my bills late, and you know, nowadays when you pay your bills late, they call you immediately. There's no grace period. I was 5 days late with my bill to Macy's, and they called me at home. All right, before you judge me, my bill was $39, okay? And they called me at home. And I was like, what do you think I'm gonna do, skip town? What do you think, I'm gonna leave the country with my Lancome eyebrow pencil and ruin the company? I mean, it's $39, you're calling me at home. We owe China $385 billion. I wanna hear that call. Hello, this is Mr. Chen. I must speak with you about urgent matter. Just to update our records, are you still at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue?
And music by hip-hop artist Tia P.
Living, I pray you open your eyes, fool. They stay swole from getting hit with that 1-2. Sort of like these rhymes do. I'm doing better than better. I do great. I just hate when niggas confuse criticism with hate.
But first...
Roasted Spam.
Does anyone ever review their spam folder on a regular basis? I thought I would and see what humor comes out of it. Why should the hard work of all the world's spammers go unroasted? Here we go. Subject: good news. Mr. Warren Edward Buffett. With a Japanese email address. My name is Warren E. Buffett, an American business magnate. I might just not know how to spell magnet. Investor and philanthropist, because that's how people introduce themselves. Am the most successful investor in the world today and chairman of the Berkshire Hathaway. I believe strongly in giving while living. I had one idea that never changed in my mind, that you should use your wealth to help people, and I have decided to secretly give $1.5 million to randomly selected individuals worldwide. I didn't realize Warren Buffett was so nice. Send your replies to MrWarrenBuffett01@yahoo.com to enable me give you more details about the donation. Language is Warren Buffett's first language. Best regards, Mr. Warren Edward Buffett, millionaire investor. That's how he signs all of his letters. That's a good one. Second one, will you stop sending me your photos? Please stop sending me your that's not spam. Here we go. Hello, prospective friend. Hello there. My name is Mariana Kimberly Jill, three first names, a U.S. Army and medical doctor that take care of the soldiers serving presently in the Middle East. I have been longing to spend my retirement, which is close in your country due to its wonderful scenario. At the end of my service years, draw closer day by day like I told you before. I'm contacting you for a possible partnership in both real estate and other lucrative investment you may suggest in your country. Having worked throughout my military career as a medical expert, which is very sensitive and financially lucrative too, there are ever tendency that while living in the United States, every of my day-to-day activities, including investments, will be closely monitored. I don't want to be indicted for any reason. Therefore, I would like to start making early preparations for my retirement, which made my choice of investing in your country ideal. I have approximately US dollars 4 million. Those military doctors are making a lot more money than I thought these days. I would like to invest in your country, and this, like I did mention, was made following medical service, and I, some of my colleagues as, I don't read like this, I'm reading word for word, and some of my colleagues as close group rendered to government ministries in the Middle East. This is an investment proposal, and I need somebody with vast knowledge in business that would manage and invest the fund in a profit-oriented venture. I think that's supposed to be venture. Pending my retirement, all legitimate protocols necessary to transfer the funds legally to you is on ground. Get back to me if you're interested and trustworthy, and I will give you more details. All right, guys, I gotta go. Gotta go respond to Mariana Kimberly Jill, my prospective friend. Remember, everybody, spam exists because people fall for it. And now I'd like to welcome our guest, comedian Corey Kahaney. Welcome to the show, Corey.
Thank you for having me. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Calling from New York. New York today?
Yeah, a little cloudy, a little overcast.
Yeah, yeah. But warming up, I hope.
Yeah, we like to say this winter needs to be given the light in comedy.
So I'm going to start out with a really, really important question. It's been on my mind for a long time. Why are Jews so funny?
No, there's a real answer.
I know. I have to ask you that.
I mean, there are actual scholars who have done, you know, PhDs on this topic. I mean, the short answer is our coping mechanism for terrible tragedy has always been you know you're healing when you're laughing about it. And sometimes it's just so bad that if you can't find a joke in it, you know you're finished. So the first person who makes the joke, the first person who finds levity in the dire situation is the most revered person, you know? And the reason why there's a disproportionate number of women that are funny, and this is very few people will talk about this, yeah, is back in the, in the days of, you know, shtetls, which are these settlements in, you know, Russia and Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. Back then, you know, I'm talking about, think of Fiddler on the Roof era.
Yep.
You know, a good Jewish man basically stayed home and studied all day. Sure, he worked the fields a little bit, but for the most part, it was a little bit of field labor and then studying. Whereas the women had to go to the marketplace and they had to sell stuff. They had to sell the crops and they had to sell the cheese and whatever there was to actually earn cash. And so Jewish women had the public persona. Jewish women lived very public lives. And they, you know, also gave us a tremendous love for shopping. But they definitely, that's where I think they honed their kind of moxie, their sort of extrovert personalities.
Cool. That's a great answer. So you've had a pretty illustrious career. You've done a lot of late night appearances.
Yes. And basically people, comedians and nursing mothers have seen me on television. That's the way I like it.
How many of the hosts can you name right now? How many of the hosts? Let's go. Let's do it.
That I've performed
for? Yes, yes, go.
Oh, so Craig Ferguson.
You start out with Craig Ferguson? Come on.
Well, no, I'm going back. I can go way back. I can go to Martin Short. I performed. I did his late night show.
Keep going.
I did, God, what did I do?
You started David.
David Letterman. And I did, last year, Stephen Colbert, and I have done, I actually did Carson Daly when he had Later. Nice. I did, is there more?
No Magic Johnson or Chevy Chase in there?
No, but you know, there's a tape that I can't find, and that is John Cleese introduced me one time at the Montreal Comedy Festival, and I can't find the tape because I just want to get that clip.
Ooh, yeah.
Where John, yeah.
That's a keeper.
I can't find it. I have to ask somebody at Montreal to cut me a tape or something.
Who's your favorite?
Who's my favorite host of late night?
Yes.
Well, I mean, Craig used me a lot. And he also, you know, I don't know if you know, this is going way back, but when Craig Ferguson put comics on, he used it as a bathroom break.
No, I didn't know that.
He did. He would, as soon as the comic came out, he went, either he smoked a cigarette or he went to the bathroom. And after, I guess, the third time I did it, he came to my dressing room and he goes, just so you know, I don't miss your stand-up because I don't think you're funny. It's just, this is the only time I get 5 minutes by myself. And he said, and you always crush it. So I have no doubt.
Did they pipe in the show into the bathroom maybe?
I don't know. No, I think he, that must be it. I think he watches, you know, he was so intense. He was involved with every aspect of the show. He was there for the editing. I mean, he really took that show seriously. I give him a lot of credit. He didn't trust anybody's opinion about comedy except his own. And apparently, I know this to be true because a couple of people when I was at the show told me when he would run his monologue, he would not show it unless, I mean, there was anything that was edgy. He would only perform it for the makeup girl. That's the only person he trusted in terms of whether or not the jokes were up to par.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. She must've had a talent for comedy.
You know, I knew her. I
and
knew
makeup.
This makeup.
And makeup.
Yeah. The makeup girl that Craig Ferguson had was actually the makeup girl that used to be on Politically Incorrect. So I actually knew her for many years.
Okay.
And so she kind of, you know, she told me a lot of things I probably, you know, was not everyone was privy to.
Ah, anything I'd be interested in?
Well, one time, this is, you know, nobody wants to kick somebody when they're down, but one time Kathy Griffin was there. And so the makeup girl comes in and you could tell she's really tense. She goes, Corey, I can't do you today. We have Kathy Griffin next door and it's very intense. She said, is it okay if my junior associate, what? I said, sure. I said, you know, I'm not that hard to do. And I said, but what's going on next door? And she said, well, you know, it's Kathy Griffin and everything has to be perfect. And I said to Kathy, I said, can you just let her know that part of the allure of being a fag hag is you don't have to be that pretty. and the makeup woman goes, no, Corey, you go tell her that.
Are you saying Kathy needs a lot of work?
It's not so much that she just wanted. This is not the first time. I once dealt with a wardrobe person when I did my HBO half hour. She, you know, the person had done Kathy and they were so nervous about doing another female comedian. I said, no, calm down. I just want to look thin. I don't care. Black. That's all I want. You know, black, maybe something streamlined, you know, pick some cool earrings. You know, I could just see he was totally shell-shocked. Yeah, Kathy really cares about her appearance. And listen, that's not to knock her talent. She's amazingly talented. And I listen, everybody that's a perfectionist should be allowed to be a perfectionist. But many times have I crossed paths with people that have post-traumatic stress from working with Kathy from an appearance standpoint.
She is awesome. I've seen her a couple of times live. She's a great performer.
And I do think that, you know, it's so misogynistic how her career is destroyed for what she did. I mean, it's insane. There's no way they would do that to a guy. They would say, what a jerk, and then move on. But with Kathy, she lost like an entire year's worth of work. I think that's terrible.
You think it's permanently destroyed or it'll come back?
She seems to be coming back. I, you know, she had a really great appearance on Bill Maher,
yep,
on Real Time, I guess 2 weeks ago. I thought she was very convincing that she's over it and she's moving on. And I think she's, you know, she's starting to tour again. I think she'll come back.
Yeah, she changed her look too. So she now she's probably even more meticulous about how she looks with a new do.
That new do. it's so great. She looks great.
Yeah.
She looked good. I didn't like the other haircut.
By the way, I love the New York City traffic in the background. I love New York City.
Well, I do too. It's part of the reason why my career is where it is. I cringe at the thought of having to move to LA. And that's been one of the issues for me, because I really don't want to live anywhere else. So
do you come out and perform here?
I come to LA usually once a year for something. I mean, you know, it used to be I'd come out to do Craig Ferguson, or I'd come out to do some other, you know, show like that. I haven't been there in about a year and a half, so I'm probably due. I enjoy when I'm in LA. I don't find the performing to be as rewarding as it is in New York. The audiences are a little different. It's kind of hypocritical of me to say this, because I make my living on the road. I make my living doing corporates. I make my living doing fundraisers for, you know, breast cancer and Hadassah and, you know, and all kinds of stuff. And I'm also on cruise ships. So it's not that I have to have a New York audience. But if I'm performing for me, if I'm doing a spot that pays anywhere from $25 to $50, I want it to be for me. I want it to be a crowd that completely gets me. And, you know, I don't feel that way all the time in L.A. So.
Were you born in New York?
I was born in New York, but my family lives in San Diego. So, I mean, I graduated from high school in Southern California. It's not that I'm unfamiliar with the mindset, but I was born in New York City. And as soon as I was 18, I came right back. My family, we moved to California when I was in high school.
Why the move?
My parents hated the winters, and they didn't, and, you know, my father had a few dollars, and the idea was to move to Santa Barbara, because I think he had seen pictures. And the day that we got to Santa Barbara, there was an oil spill. And so they kept driving south.
Till they landed there. Yeah, it's a beautiful area.
Yeah, till they landed there. Yeah.
So I have a similar story. We lived in Albany, upstate New York, and my dad worked year-round outside, so we moved out to California for his job, and I was just before high school for me. So
yeah,
I never left. I'm still here.
Well, you know, I don't know what you look like, honestly, but I mean, all the girls in San Diego, the ones that were desirable, were, you know, tall, blonde, you know, and I was like, I don't fit in here. I also wanted to be an actress, so it didn't make sense to be in San Diego. And I was like, I'm not going to go to L.A. because I don't look like a model. So I'll go to New York and I'll do Chekhov and Strindberg and Shakespeare and
Very cool. Well, I loved you in the first season of Last Comic Standing. I thought that was a great show. It sucked that it went off the air. But you were in the inaugural season, right? You made it.
Yes.
You made it pretty far, too. You made it to like.
I made it to the last episode. Yeah. Yeah.
But most recently, you were on season 11 of America's Got Talent, right?
Yeah, I really should have learned my lesson. You know, contest shows for me, it's not. I've had enough contests. I got to stop.
Yeah, I was going to ask. So somebody that's, you know, you've had a great steady career of doing a lot of, you know, a lot of shows, and you're always booked and everything. So what is it like for someone like you to go on a show like this versus, you know, because a lot of the acts are. They're new. Some of them are even like it's their first time, you know, performing in front of an audience. But you've done it for so long. So what is it like for a comedian like you to go on that show?
Well, it's stupid and it's dumb and I shouldn't have done it.
So you don't suggest it?
No.
Why? No. But, why?
Well, OK, first of all, you have to understand Tom Cotter, who came in second. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what season. Two seasons before I did it.
Right.
Is a really close friend of mine. And, okay. And also we both, at the time, we both had the same manager. You know, he struck gold with Tom on America's Got Talent, and he wanted all of his people to have lightning strike twice, basically is what happened.
Okay.
And I mean, they made it as palatable as they could. They knew who I was when it was suggested that I was interested in competing. They said, listen, you know, she can submit with a tape. I mean, they made it very attractive. So when I finally went before judges, I had not been through the mill as much as, say, a complete novice would have. Mm-hmm. That said, they have it in their mind, I think, you know, what they're looking for. When I say they, I mean the judges, what they're, mm-hmm. and you know, they, I stupidly did it the year that Howard Stern had left.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was just a bad move. But enlightening. I mean, I realized that it's not always about talent. It's about, you know, creating a magic moment. There were magic moments. I mean, there was back behind the scenes in America's Got Talent was the funniest thing you could imagine. I mean, that should be a show.
It's a circus, right?
Yeah. I mean, when they eliminated, there were these people in their late 60s that were tightrope walkers. And when they got eliminated, they just stood on stage and they're pointing to the guy that got pushed through. They said, "Him? You think him? We put life in jeopardy. We walk 50 feet in the air. You take him? He do card trick. He do card trick." And I mean, we're dying. It's like so funny. And they wouldn't get off the stage. And yet it was like, and not only that, but you know, they're in their 60s. And yes, they're in very good shape. But there's only so much you can hide with spandex of a person in their 60s. So there's like, it was like hard to look at. It was so funny. Him, he go through, but not us.
You're right. There's a whole separate show there.
That was just so funny. And then all these bright and excited, you know, interns that have a tiny little bit of power that have just come out of film school or that, you know, want to be agents and that, you know, they all have the exact same personality. I honestly think they should all have the same name. It should be Josh or Meg. I mean, they're all the same people. And just, yes, there's that really. Listen, let's pitch this. It's a great show. I can be one of the incredibly maniacal people behind the cameras that are trying to get people to cry in these stupid interviews. And then they interview every 15 minutes on camera. That's the other thing.
So being in New York, have you been on Howard Stern's show? Met with Howard Stern?
I have not. Okay. I honestly am a chicken.
Chicken.
Chicken, yeah.
Couldn't handle it, huh?
You know what? I can't handle the roasting hull mentality. I just can't do it. And I, you know, maybe now he's definitely mellowed with age.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a different show.
I could definitely do the show now. When it was in its heyday, what was I going to say to him if he started in with the, you know, tell me about how many times you've done anal. I can't, I'm not, come on. I have kids. What?
Hold on, I'm updating my script. I can't ask you that question now. He's one of my idols, so.
No, he's. That doesn't mean that I don't, you know, admire and respect him. I really have just been too much of a chicken to get on to pursue it.
Talk about a circus! Imagine walking through the the halls of the Stern Show, right?
It's true, but I mean, he's certainly someone that I would be very thrilled to, you know, sit next to at a party. How's that?
Sure, yeah. And he was good on America's Got Talent. He was really good.
He was great.
He showed both sides. He showed his performer, radio show performer side, as well as a different side, you know, when talking to, you know, the kids and things like that, going up on stage. And yeah, it's a pretty cool show. Let's talk about something in the news. I like to talk to my guests about something in the news. So Bill Maher wrote an op-ed titled "Trump's America is being run by Fox and Friends." You've been a regular on Fox and Friends. You perform on there?
I've been a guest on Fox and Friends. Fox and Friends very often brings comedians on to talk about something, you know, one-on-one. This may date me a little bit. I think, you know, Hasselbeck was still one of the people when I was last on. But I did it a few times. And they have called me recently. I have to go back.
Okay.
What I think of Fox and Friends, what I think of Fox as a general, is it's such a jarring, what's the word, reminder that there is another America. Right. You know, I watch MSNBC and, you know, it's like I'm at a supermarket on the Upper West Side and I'm seeing people that I recognize, you know, but then when I turn the channel to Fox and every single female has a skirt on and every single female has long hair that's been straightened and every single female has, you know, has prominently displayed cleavage. It, 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 it's jarring to me. It's like, oh, what is this? Happy Days? Have I just gone from have I just gone from regular television where I see people that look like me and people that I see in my everyday life to Happy Days?
Not to mention the cameras are lowered to catch all of that right in the middle of your screen, right?
I don't know. And I just here's the thing. We have gotten to a point now, is the whole thing cringeworthy that he's, you know, that he goes on TV. It's like he's doing Home Shopping Network. I'll take that guy. I'll take that guy. I'll take that girl.
Yeah. So what do you think about all that? That's actually the question. You got up to it before me. What do you think about all these? Yeah, the hiring by the White House seems to be coming straight out of...
It's like Fahrenheit 451. He really thinks he's got like a live relationship with television. It hasn't really happened yet.
It's bizarre, right?
Yeah, he just picks up the phone and he can get these people, you know, live. I mean, it is because he's, how you know, because he's... I was going to say Howard Stern. It is because he's Donald Trump, but I suppose MSNBC could learn something from this. They should just start really sucking up to him. And start saying, you know, I really like, you know, his policy on this. And you know, I think he showed great restraint here. And, you know, part of the reason why America likes him is because of this. Start saying nice things and then we can get in there and, change things. Because if you keep criticizing him and viciously, you know, crucifying him, all you're going to do is create more of a monster. Whereas, you know, Fox News knows exactly, you know, where their bread is buttered. So, I mean, I have to give them credit. They're really smart. Unfortunately, they're not smart. They're morons.
So you're saying MSNBC should have a staff meeting. Okay, for the next, until we get three people hired into the Trump administration, we've got to tout all of his, even though we hate it, we're going to say that everything that he's doing is positive and great because we need to get some people into the White House.
No, it's got to be. Okay, listen. Rachel, you have to say one nice thing about him in your first 5 minutes. He only watches for the first 5 minutes. So say very nice things about him. Then he's going to change the channel. You can say whatever you want after that.
Watch your facial expressions.
Yes.
Because you can say something without words.
Lawrence O'Donnell, you have to stop talking like it's Armageddon. All right, yeah. Stop it. Stop it. You have to say that, you know, if you don't want to talk about the president, talk about the fact that you had a nice, you know, you had a nice cup of coffee, a latte that was delicious today. You have to stop talking about end of days.
No more openings where he's the Antichrist. No more.
He takes these deep breaths and he pauses. Oh, it's man. So amazing.
Yeah.
So, and you know, Chris Matthews, he more than anyone, he has liked over in his lifetime, he has liked different Republicans. This is the time to, you know, just look at him and pretend he's McCain. That's how you get through it.
He's always so astonished by Trump.
He is. It's crazy.
All right. So something I didn't mention in the pre-interview is I quiz my guests. So I have a quiz for you. You ready for this?
Oh, yeah.
Awesome. Definitely.
Should I be fast?
Love the confidence. No. You got some time. So this is, the theme is, how smart are New York comedians in regards to the New York Friars Club? I know you performed there recently.
How smart?
How well do you know the New York Friars Club?
Very well.
That's the theme. That's the theme.
Yes.
That's not the question. So you performed there recently, right?
Yes. I perform there. I perform regularly.
Regularly. Okay.
Yeah. I'm a friar.
Awesome. No, I saw an article where you, this is going to be easy for you then. You celebrated stand-up comedian Adrian Tulsh?
Yes.
So, okay, so you're a regular there, but what was that event like? Because that's a pretty special event, right?
So Adrian Tulsh was a legend. She was, close to two decades, she was the house MC at Catch a Rising Star. But Adrian was also in my show off Broadway, which was the Japs show. And it was the history of women in stand-up. And so Adrian was one of, she was, you know, a part of my cast. She toured with us and she was a very dear friend. And it was very much the comedy royalty event because Adrian is married to Bill Sheft. And Bill Sheft was one of the head monologue writers on Letterman and for many years, and you know it, and there was, I mean, it was the who's who. Judy Gold was there, Jeff Stilson was there. It was very cool.
Very cool. Okay, This should be a breeze for you then. So I got three questions. All right.
Yes. Now
here's the first one. Name one of their mottos.
Oh. I mean, it's in Latin.
Come on, Friar.
E pluribus.
You can use English. You can use English. Just translate. Come on.
One for all. I don't think that's right.
That's not right. You don't know?
No, I don't know.
There's two main ones. Brotherhood Forever.
Okay. Right. Well, One for All. I knew it was something like that.
Maybe it translates to One for All. Okay, I'll give you that. I didn't look up that. And we only roast the ones we love.
Yes, we only roast the ones we love. That's true. Sorry.
So you mentioned you don't like the roasting?
Well, I just don't have a thick enough skin. I love to watch it.
But you've done it?
I have done it. I climb into bed for the next 2 days, you know, and my husband, my poor husband, I every 5 minutes, am I really that old? Am I really unfunny? You know,
you're going to get this one. Okay. In 1968 and again in 1970 with Johnny Carson as the roastmaster, my all-time favorite comedian, also known as the Merchant of Venom, and Mr. Warmth was roasted. Who is it?
The Merchant of Venom has to be...
And Mr. Warmth. Mr. Warmth.
Well, the Merchant of Venom would have to be Nichols.
Nichols?
Don Rickles. Don Rickles.
That's it. It's the same guy. It's the same. Both of those are his nicknames.
Okay.
Stop there.
Okay.
Nichols?
He's
rolling over in his grave.
I don't usually get up this early. Don. All right.
All right. Okay. All right. Oh, here's a good one. Here's a good one. This is a toughie. In 1988, this person smashed through the club's Tiffany ceiling by becoming the first official card-carrying female friar.
Yeah, it was Gloria Allred.
Ooh, no. She was the second. Close, though. Close. The second and first non-comedian.
Oh, so the first was a comedian?
Yeah. Yeah. Actress, singer, comedian.
Actress, singer, comedian. Was it Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend? Was it her?
Who's that?
She's a singer.
If you're saying Liza Minnelli, yes. Is that Liza Minnelli? It's Liza Minnelli. The answer is Liza.
By the way, I was just at the Friars Club performing with Liza Minnelli's, with Billy Stritch, who's Liza Minnelli's, permanent piano accompanist. I didn't think it was Liza Minnelli. I thought the first one was Gloria Allred.
Nope, she was the second, but the first non-comedian, yeah.
Wow. Michael, I feel like such a... Can you quiz me on food?
All right, what will you be cooking today? What will you be cooking today?
Today, today I'm doing all the sauces. I'm doing matzo ball soup today. And I'm doing haroset, which is, it's apples and walnuts and honey and wine and that kind of thing.
Where can people see you next?
So I'm going to be in Connecticut at the Ridgefield Playhouse in Ridgefield, Connecticut, with my dear, dear friend Karen Bergreen, also a hilarious comedian, and Erin Jackson, another female comedian. I think because of the Me Too movement, suddenly they want to book women in venues because a lot of illustrious careers ended so that we could headline.
Move over, man.
It's important. At least let's make it worth it. You know, all these poor guys lost their jobs.
A lot of good material, right?
Yeah.
Well, I wish you well, and I thank you very much for your time, Corey.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Terrific. Thank you.
You can get all the details and links about comedian Corey Kahaney in your show notes.
Music's always been important to me. Whether I'm popping or locking, I like to listen to a lot of different music. I thought I'd let artists and bands submit their music to the podcast of thousands, and we'd showcase it for them in each episode. Here's a song called Revolution by the hip-hop artist Tia P, who's from Inglewood, California. First, a couple of musical notes about Tia P. She's a Howard University graduate who's been making music and writing lyrics since the age of 6. Also, she's open for KRS-One, Bootsy Collins, and DJ Quick. I picked this song from Tia P because revolution is for the now, where matters such as race inequality, police brutality, sexual assault against women and children are at a significantly troubling high. If you like it, you can get all the information you need about Tia P in your show notes. Enjoy.
See, that's another thing. When you talk about a revolution, most people think violence without realizing that the real content of any kind of revolutionary thrust lies in the principles and the goal that you're striving for, not in the way you reach
Tia P. Television ain't focusing my precision. My purpose been planned before Stevie had inhibitions. Innocence is a privilege and not a characteristic of human beings who only begun to start living. I pray you open your eyes, fool. They stay swole from getting hit with that 1-2, sort of like these rhymes do. I'm doing better than better. I do great. I just hate when niggas confuse criticism with hate. Now these bars ain't for fun. I'm eating rappers in my sleep and use their bones for toothpicks to get they meat up my teeth. I wrote better 16s at 16 than half of these whack artists could think of ever dream. The sharp tongue of a Malcolm with Martin Luther's dream. The White House, the new big house in 2017. Clowns belong in the circus, not in the oval seat. But some of y'all still wearing black paint with rosy cheeks. Yeah, the truth's starting to sting a little. Now you probably hoping that I just sing a little. They asking the T&P, just calm it down a little. But you wouldn't ask the Riddler why he speaking riddles. Industry full of traps, easier to get ahead of what's in between your legs. Look like a sausage with eggs, but yes, I'm too proud to beg. I'm coming through chopping heads, arms, hands, feet, and legs. No, I ain't playing with you, playing with you. My words coming out sounding like new scripture. New scripture. Everybody talking head now, but who gon' listen? Or will you wait and just watch on your television? Television, such a prison. Perception has the power of camouflage and the proof. The only thing that scares us nowadays is the truth. Sometimes I feel like the only safe place is the booth. But damn, how many beats gotta die till I get through? Your body can't move unless your mind says so. But a thought is just a thought until the body says go. Everybody picking sides, the entree getting cold. I swear to God I want it all, but that includes keeping my soul.
You've been listening to the podcast of thousands. If you're a performer and want to be on our show, check us out at www.podcastofthousands.com and click on Get On. Since you're already online, check us out on Apple Podcasts. Make sure to rate us 5 stars or higher and leave us your comments. You can find all the details in our show notes. Thank you very much for listening, and to all you performers out there, break a leg.